Assalamualaikum dan salam sejahtera. Anda sedang menonton Niaga Awani bersama saya, Hakim Rahman. Kita mulakan dengan laporan mengenai harga emas yang telah meningkat dengan konsisten untuk sekitar 6 bulan lepas. Dan ini dilihat susulan ketidaktentuan dalam aset pelaburan lain ketika ini. Namun, bagaimanakah ini akan memberi kesan kepada komoditi lain? Mungkin selain minyak yang turut menjadi tumpuan pelabur dalam tempoh ketidaktentuan pasca COVID-19. Dan kita ingin melihat ini dan banyak lagi bersama Shan Syed, Ketua Pakar Ekonomi Juai IQ. Shan, thank you for joining us this morning. Let's begin with some local news. Afin Huang is expecting the central bank to slowly increase rates, maybe after the second half of 2021. So far, have we seen a great increase in consumption and confidence from the rate decrease beginning earlier this year?
I think I disagree with the notion that Bank Negara is going to increase interest rate. I think Bank Negara would lower interest rate in the next 18 months. I don't see Bank Negara is in a position to raise interest rate. We are heading for a global lower interest rate regime. To date, 31 central banks have lowered the interest rate this year. If you pick up Financial Times newspaper, 16 June, the Indonesian finance minister is saying that we will go aggressively with QE. In last month, the Thai central bank said that appreciating baht is not going to help Thai economy. So last month, rupiah appreciated 4.5%, won appreciated 3.5%, baht 2.7, Malaysian ringgit actually appreciated 2.12, Singapore dollar appreciated 1.61% against USD. So I think most of the central banks, they want to keep their currency in the depreciating mode in order to help the economy, to spur growth. No one is in a position to increase interest rate. So I think I disagree. And I think the market, what the market is expecting, and Bank Negara going forward will lower the interest rate. Because if we see globally speaking, the exogenous factors are too volatile. You have fiscal policy and monetary policy driving the growth. The governments are trying to use these policy levers to spur growth. But at the moment, the confidence and the growth is happening in Asia. It is not happening in advanced economies like Europe, US and Japan. So I think lower interest rate can help spur growth in the short run, but ultimately it is the macroeconomic stability that drives the growth of the economy, and it brings confidence back into the economy. So I think going forward, Bank Negara will look at the market, and they will position themselves according to the market, and they will adjust the OPR rate according to the market requirement.
Shan, a rate increase should get people to buy more big ticket items. What about the property market? Do we see a healthy growth of home sales?
I think the property market continues to be on the global investors' radar. From January 1st to 30th June, Juai IQI have made a sale of 2.4 billion ringgit this year, which is despite MCO, despite the lockdown globally, we have been able to achieve our half-yearly target much ahead of time, because we at IQI still believe that the market is still very solid. Interest rates are not going up. Interest rates will continue to stay low. And because of lower interest rate, it helps sophisticated and smart investors to take position in real estate. And real estate has become the new global currency. Most of the sovereign wealth funds, hedge funds, endowment funds, they are taking long-term position. Even Alibaba has taken long-term position in Singapore commercial real estate in the month of April, if you recall. So I think it's a clear signal that big investors and big players, they continue to stay focused, and they want to park their funds in real estate. And history and economics have taught us that sophisticated and smart investors who really understand the situation, they've already taken position in real estate and gold. So I think, in my opinion, investors will continue to stay long-term in real estate. And moreover, we at IQI have witnessed strong interest from Chinese investors, Japanese, Korean, Middle Eastern Pakistani and Bangladeshi investors who are quite keen to park their funds in Malaysia. So Malaysia continues to be on the global investors' radar in terms of property because of its modern infrastructure, labor productivity, macroeconomic stability, and above all, Malaysia is an important player in Belt and Road equation. Mm-hmm.
Now, the rate increase is expected only after the second half of next year. Would this indicate that the market and the economy are still volatile? What would this do to gold price and other investment class commodities?
I think market will continue to stay volatile. There will be a lot of bedlam and pandemonium in the market. And because of that, investors would take position in tangible assets. And if you have seen, gold prices have jumped 63% in the last 5 years, and this bull run will continue for the next 5 to 10 years. The way things are shaping up, the macro environment for gold is very favorable. You cannot print gold. Gold is in limited quantity, and there's a lot of demand of gold. And gold is the only asset class where you have zero counterparty risk. So the first bull run started in 1971 when gold prices were trading at $35 per ounce, and in 1980 it was trading at $850 per ounce. So in just a span of 9 years, gold appreciated 2,328%. The second bull run started in 2001 when gold prices were trading at $257 per ounce. And on 6 September 2011, gold prices were trading at $1,923 per ounce. So a clear 648% increase just in a span of 10 years. And this is the third bull run. You will be surprised to know that last year, Russia, Turkey, Poland, China, and Kazakhstan, these five countries contributed 83% of the global gold purchase. So it clearly sends a very positive signal to the market that gold will continue to stay on the global investors' radar. Central banks are taking huge positions in gold, and there is financialization of commodities, which is happening. And once you have big investors, hedge funds taking position in commodities, obviously commodities will have a good bull run. I think oil will continue to stay on the upside because of geopolitical risk. Gold, dollar will continue to have tail end risk, and there will be supply constraints, especially or bankruptcies happening in shale gas. So gold, oil, silver, they will be the major focus of attention in the media and among financial commentators for the next 3 to 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Oil prices are still around $30 to $40 per barrel. How would this move in the second half of 2020?
In my opinion, I think when you recall 20th April when oil was trading negative $37.63, people said, you know, this would continue. And at IQI, we said the oil prices will stabilize between $30 and $40 per barrel. Right now, when I speak, oil prices are trading at $41.50. And year end, we expect oil prices to be trading between $47 and $57 per barrel. By next year, we expect oil prices to be hovering close to three digits. I wouldn't be surprised if oil touches three digits. The premise is very simple. There's a lot of geopolitical risk. Right now, we have huge risk between China and India. Nobody's talking about it. The tension is escalating. China is making advanced movement in Ladakh, Sikkim, Pangong, and in other areas. And India has not been listening to China. I would blame India for not resolving this issue. The second issue, geopolitical risk, comes from North Korea, which continues to be unpredictable, and the market has not been able to gauge the next move. The third geopolitical risk comes from GCC, where you don't know what will happen and what will trigger in that part of the world. So I think geopolitical risk. The second is Fed will continue to print money. If we have seen from 9th March till 11th May, Fed has added $2.3 trillion to its balance sheet. And right now, the Fed's balance sheet is $6.9 trillion, which is 75% more than the balance sheet that was hovering in March. So I think these factors will contribute significantly to the upsurge in oil price, not only in this year, but also for next year. So I think oil prices, gold, silver, these are the major commodities which would have major attraction for many sophisticated and smart investors moving forward.
According to Reuters, U.S. employers announced an additional 170,219 job cuts in June as the recession caused by the COVID-19 depresses demand and pushes companies into bankruptcy. For a country that depends so much on consumer spending, when will U.S. see the light at the end of the tunnel?
Yes, this is a very important question. At the start of the year, we said 47 million people in U.S. Will be jobless by June. And right now when I speak, there are 45 million people who are jobless in US. The premise is very simple, because of this COVID, because of uncertainty, because of recessionary mode that US economy is heading towards. We will continue to have a depressed market. We will continue to have disappointing spending. The consumption patterns are very weak because there's a sense of despondency. 80% of the US markets are closed. There's in a state of lockdown. Some states are open, some states are not open. So people are frustrated and they don't know how to come out of this frustration phase. And the government is a bit panicking. Not only the government, but Fed is panicking as well. So when the central bank and the governments are panicking and they don't have policy instrument or lever to spur growth, that adds significantly to the depressed and subpar growth of GDP. So I would not be surprised that US will continue to stay in this subpar growth mode for 21 or even for the first half of 2022. I'm not expecting US to make a quick recovery. It won't be a V-shape or U-shape recession. It will be L-shaped recession. I have been saying all along since last October, you're a witness to it. So I think L-shape recession will take a bit longer for US economy to make a comeback, and Fed will continue to print money. I would not be surprised if Fed's balance sheet touches $11 trillion by year end, and consumer spending will stay disappointing this year.
And Reuters also reported that the manufacturing sectors in Asia is steadily on the increase. Now, where would this product go now that the US is still struggling?
Asia is the growth story. Most of the growth is happening in Asia, like China, Vietnam, Malaysia, Indonesia, Thailand, Philippines. These are the economies that are contributing significantly to the growth story of Asia. And there was a survey conducted by Economist Magazine and Financial Times, I still remember, in 2018-2019, where they asked CEOs, where would you be parking your funds? So most of the CEOs responded quite positively for Asia, and they foresee a lot of growth opportunities in Asia because of young demographics. Governments are in total control of the economy. They have modern infrastructure, but most importantly, you have productive labor force. Look at Malaysia. Malaysian economy is still, despite of the MCO, consumers are coming back. Labor productivity is still very strong. And ultimately, at the end of the day, is the productive labor force that drives the GDP growth of any economy. So I think, in my opinion, Asia will continue to take lead. Europe has become irrelevant. Japan, Korea, they have become irrelevant. US will continue to have subpar growth. India, on the other hand, has become irrelevant. So growth is happening in Asia, ASEAN. This is where people have got money. They have got the purchasing power. They have a higher level of income. And most importantly, they have higher saving to GDP ratio, which propels these consumers to make strong purchases, and the consumption pattern will stay strong moving forward.
Thank you, Shan Syed. Ketua Pakar Ekonomi Juai IQI bercakap mengenai impak harga emas kepada komoditi lain, dan niaga awal ini akan berhenti seketika. Kembali selepas ini.